Dr. Paul, welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. Today's show features an interview with our own Dr. Henry Ely. We're calling this the COVID Special Report. The shots aren't working. We have breakthrough COVID-19 infections, breakthrough hospitalizations, breakthrough deaths, update on the grand jury petition that Dr. Ely filed, and then we're going to end with discussing how do you support your immune system? How do you treat COVID vaccine injury? It's tough, but it's being done. Bernadette closes us out with monkeypox. What's up with this vaccine or treatments for this thing they're calling monkeypox? And what can you do perhaps naturally for prevention? And should you end up somehow ending up with monkeypox, what can you do naturally to treat yourself? Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. Yesterday, I had an amazing experience. I was working with our body worker and wellness coach with a set of twins. They were 3 weeks old, and the pure innocence of these babies and the ability to just hold and feel just that peace that's within, we lose that when we get older, don't we? I thought about this. The first half of life, and that first half, I mean, maybe it's 35 years. In my case, I would say it was 64 years. I was all about ego, finding my way, making my way in the world, you know, economic survival, raising a family, starting a career, all those things, but it kept me in ego. Now, I was reading a book. The book was titled Falling Upward by Richard Rohr. And the secret of the soul, as he points out, is this risking it all. Allowing yourself to be led, but then here's the thing. You have to have faith and trust when things fall apart, and they do and they will. And then you can really discover a deeper love. He calls it falling upwards. So we all go through some failure, some pain, even tragedy, and it's necessary. It certainly was for me. When I had such a deep desire just for something deeper, more meaningful, for God, a desire for everything good, for truth, for everything that's beautiful, it was from that experience that I was able to really connect with my own soul. So holding those babies, oh my goodness, feeling a soul-to-soul connection, that's what it's all about. I just wanted to share that with you from my heart to yours. I love you. Welcome, Dr. Henry Ely, back to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. It is always a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's so great to be here, Paul. Every time I love seeing you, brother. I hope everything's well with you and everybody in your audience. Thank you so much for listening in.
So for folks, if you're going to stick with this interview all the way, we are going to cover the shots, whether they're working or not, the grand jury update that Dr. Ely's been so involved with, lots of data, but then we go into actually what can you do to prime your immune system? What are the nutrients you can take? How to do this? And then at the very end, we're actually going to touch on the state of our world how it seems to be so dualistic, where you're either right or wrong. And how do we get from that to a both and, where we are all included in this discussion? Mm-hmm. So let's kick it off with regards to whether the shots are working or not. Maybe give us a little your thoughts on that and how many breakthrough confirmed COVID-19 infections there are.
First things first is the CDC stopped tracking all or publishing data on all vaccine breakthroughs in October of 2021. And so we have to go, well, what does a breakthrough mean? A breakthrough means that these are people that are deemed fully vaccinated. They got both both Pfizer, both Moderna, one J&J, and it's been at least 14 days since their last shot. That's deemed fully vaccinated. Now, a lot of these people are now boosted, triple shot, quadruple shot as well. And we got some data on that. But what we're seeing is that, you know, the shots don't work. I mean, if I can encapsulate this. So a breakthrough means the shot didn't work. The shot didn't prevent infection. The shot didn't prevent a hospitalization, or the shot didn't prevent death. Person got the shot, still got sick with COVID anyway, still got the infection. And then there was some sequelae following. So far, so good.
Yep, absolutely. Okay.
Now, what's interesting about to qualify for evaluation for breakthrough, there are some interesting metrics you have to hit. Number one, you have to be symptomatic. You cannot be asymptomatic and submit a sample for breakthrough evaluation. That's pretty curious right there. Mm-hmm. The second thing is you have to have a PCR that registers positive below a cycle threshold of 28. What that means is that they have eliminated false positives from this evaluation. False positives are just for the unvaxxed, and that's to keep the case counts and the hospitalizations and all that nonsense higher than it really is. Okay.
So can I ask you a question there?
Because of course.
I don't think people truly get the magnitude of what you just said about this cycle count of 28 or less. Mm-hmm. I remember early on seeing some documents showing that, you know, if you did a cycle count of 13 to 20 something, mm-hmm. A positive was a positive. I mean, they were actually finding sequences mm-hmm. of the virus. Mm-hmm. But when you get past about 30, 35, it's almost worthless, especially if they're asymptomatic. So my question though is this: the labs I'm aware of are not doing 28 cycles or less. They're still doing 35 plus cycles.
Right. Most labs are actually doing, Dr. Paul, higher than 40 cycles. We found labs doing 42 to 47, which is you can find anything. You can call anything COVID. It's just dead nucleotides. You couldn't take that sample, put it in a petri dish and culture and see the virus, you know, reanimate if there was a cell in there. So it's basically false positives. It's estimated that when a person's cycle threshold is above, I think it's 28 to 32, somewhere in that range. If you're higher than, let's just say, be generous, if you're higher than 32, it's a 97% likelihood of a false positive. It's garbage. You can't trust it.
That's what the news reports on, and that's what keeps people in fear, because they keep hearing there's COVID around, right? I mean, the more you test, the more you find if you're using a test that picks up nothing basically and gives you a false positive.
Right.
All right. So we're not comparing apples to apples or oranges to oranges when we compare the unvaxxed to the vaxxed with regards to breakthrough infections, hospitalizations, and deaths, because the vaxxed only get counted if they're using a good metric. Mm-hmm. And the unvaxxed, you get counted no matter what.
Right. So obviously what that's going to do is that's going to make with false positive, it's going to make the unvaxxed look like a big problem. And with reducing and removing false positives and being very stringent on what the guidelines are for a person qualifying for this evaluation, the fully vaxxed numbers are going to be low. And that was the intent: drive down the fully vaxxed failures. We don't want this number to be high. So in addition to that, what they did was at the peak in February, there were 26 state health departments reporting in on this. Only 26 out of 51, I include Washington, D.C. in this evaluation. But from February to June, that number went down to 17. So 9 states stopped reporting this information on how many times this is failing. Stop reporting between February and June. That's a problem right there. We're getting less information. So with only 17 state health departments reporting in, we are now at 11.8 million confirmed breakthrough cases. 11.8 million times people got both shots, were deemed fully vaccinated, still contracted COVID, still got sick anyway, right? That's the failure. Now, if we extrapolate that out, let's say all 51 were reporting and they were doing their due diligence and everything, it is easy for us to say that's well over 30 million Americans right now. It's easy for us to extrapolate that out, but we can't prove that because the data doesn't exist on purpose. So we can prove 11.8 million. Now, when we look at this from a hospitalization, because what is the CDC and the Biden administration been saying? If you get this, symptoms won't be severe. You won't have to be hospitalized. That's nonsense. All right. It's absolute nonsense. In this case, in February, there were 25 states reporting in. By June, that had gone down to 16. So now you're seeing the same phenomenon. States are stopping reporting this information because it doesn't look good. We now, with just 16 states reporting in, have 276,000 reports of people who got the shots, got sick, and had to be hospitalized because of COVID. Now, that comes with a cost, especially if we're looking at Medicare, Medicaid. The average cost around the country is $10,400 per day for people who are hospitalized. It's way more in California. It's way less in a place like North Dakota, obviously, right? But it's about $10,400. The average stay in the hospital is 14.3 days. Okay, so that means we're at least $140,000 being billed to Medicare, Medicaid. And let me translate this. Who's Medicare, Medicaid? We are. The American taxpayer is Medicare, Medicaid. So what we've done is when you take what it potentially could be like California, Dr. Paul, it's $400,000 on average, $400,000 per hospitalization. Wow. When you multiply that by that dollar amount, by how many people got the shots failed to protect them, the shots failed to prevent hospitalization, we're talking in the neighborhood of $40 to $80 billion of American taxpayer money that we can confirm has now been spent to help these people when the therapy, or excuse me, the intervention failed. Okay? Wow. Okay. And then, so now we see in the last bit of data, in February of 28, there were 28 states reporting in, but now there's only 16. So 12 states stopped reporting this metric between February and June. Still, with that, there are 59,000 confirmed deaths, meaning people got fully vaccinated, still got sick, likely got hospitalized because of it, and then died.
Yeah.
So this is 59,000 times the shots failed to prevent death. And again, well, that's with only a handful of states reporting it.
It's way worse than that for two reasons. One that you just mentioned that not everybody's reporting. But secondly, when we go to VAERS data, and I know you're all over this, it shows that when the vaccine causes death or injury, that's usually in the first week after the vaccine. Well, all those people in the first couple of weeks are designated non-vaxxed.
Exactly. And this is the important caveat. I'm going to bring that on to back you up, Dr. Paul. I'm going to bring that data on. So we have data from December 13th through July 1st. Okay. So this is, of course, these numbers are a few weeks old now at this point. Okay.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that we've always deemed somebody after they've gotten the shot to be inoculated, right? Pediatric right. cases, right?
You get the shot, you're immunized.
You're immunized. Now you can go play ball. Because when are kids getting the shot to go play sports and things like that, right? So you got the shot, you're good. This 14-day window is very interesting because when we look at the Lund University study that shows that the mRNA reverse transcribes and becomes DNA, it does so within 6 hours. So that means there is an upload and a genetic modification within 6 hours. Why do you need 14 days? It doesn't take 14 days for the production of the spike protein to start and the immune system to react to it and things like that. 14 is this arbitrary number. So you have to ask, why would they do that? 14 days from the last shot until you're deemed fully vaxxed isn't based upon any serologic studies of antibodies going up or anything like that. It's especially to do what you just said. It's to create a window where a person is technically fully vaxxed, but these 14 days, they're considered unvaxxed still. So if they get hurt or if they get hurt by the shot, they are now, it's a problem. It's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Right. These are the people that you can still make that, oh, they were unvaccinated, hadn't been 14 days. So they don't qualify for breakthrough evaluation. That date, if that person gets hospitalized or dies, they're counted as unvaxxed. It makes it look like it's driving, that the unvaxxed are driving the problem when the unvaxxed are actually saving the world right now. Okay. So to back you up, Dr. Paul, look at this in this column on the right. We have, as of July 1st, all deaths in every age range, we have 29,273 as of July 1st. But here's the thing. Go to one column to the right. 7,953 of those deaths occurred within 48 hours.
Oh.
Now, Now, what I have more, I love when folks, when you look at it on a week perspective, if you look at it, if I did it for 7 days, it would be roughly about half of these deaths would occur within 7 days. Wow. But I said, you know, people go, well, correlation doesn't equal causation. You hear that crap all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So I say, okay, now explain to me why 8,000 people died in under 48 hours from getting the shot. You know, I mean, there's a certain point where it's like, folks, we have to use just common sense here.
Right.
And that common sense is 8,000 people should not be dying within 48 hours after getting an intervention. That is worthy. It's a safety signal that's worthy of shutting this program down, at the very least putting a major pause on it for full independent analysis of what's going on. If one kid dying in a car seat can launch an entire shutdown of that car seat and that manufacturer, right? Then we should have the same standard for these shots.
Yeah. Do you have an image of the VAERS data? I'm just curious, because that might, sometimes it shows the deaths or hospitalizations relative to when they got the vaccine in a graph.
I don't have it in a graphical form, but we do have hospitalizations here. How many people got the shot and had to be hospitalized after getting the shot? 165,000.
Wow.
So so people are going to the hospital from injuries from the shot, and people are going to the hospital because the shot is failing to protect them from the infection. This is a massive failure, and it comes with severe economic costs. We're talking in the hundreds of billions of dollars right now for the American taxpayer.
Out of frustration, you did something that few have done, and that's a grand jury petition. Can you give us a little history on that and then an update?
Sure. Well, we first published a paper showing that the death certificates had been manipulated. We did a peer-reviewed paper. It was published by IPAC Journal, Dr. James Lyons Weiler, in October of 2020. It got picked up by the USA Today. They tried to discredit it. They weren't able to. So it even withstood that attempt at cancel culture. I personally paid for our paper and a synopsis of what was going on to go out to every U.S. attorney in the United States. I sent it out myself.
Wow.
Okay, we spent, it was tens of thousands of dollars to do all this, right? We sent out hard copies. We sent out electric copies. We got zero responses. So I went, okay, this is deeply troubling now. I got in touch with a couple senators, great folks, Senator Dennis Linthicum and Senator Kim Thatcher, who backed us and said, well, let us write something to a U.S. attorney here, Scott Asfog, and let's see if we can get some movement that way. Scott Asfog in Oregon, instead of taking that information and sending it to a grand jury as he should have, he sent it to the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice basically got in the way and said, you know what, we don't have to tell you senators anything, and we're not going to tell you whether we are or whether we aren't launching an investigation. But the feel was, we're not moving forward with any investigation. So we said, we can't let this stand. We wrote a 63-page grand jury petition, filed it in federal court with over a thousand pages of exhibit evidence. And we asked of the court, and we named five names: Rochelle Walensky, Xavier Becerra, Robert Redfield, Alex Azar, and Brian Moyer. These are all heads of the Health and Human Services Department, the CDC, or the National Vital Statistics System. These were all the major players in erecting what we have deemed a system of fraud, of criminal fraud. And what they did was they modified on March 24th the death certificates so that if you had a comorbid condition and you were tested positive for COVID, or even not tested positive, you could have just been presumed
positive. COVID. I remember that.
Right. You could, if you died, you could be counted as COVID only. COVID was the cause of death. The comorbidities would be moved down to a different part of the death certificate. It was it's the only thing we've ever done this for. Comorbidities have always been the cause of death. So
that resulted in people having a car accident and dying from that being labeled as a death from COVID, for example.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And 2 days later, so this happens on March 24th, 2020. 2 days later, we get the Health and Human Services Department erecting a structure of Medicare, Medicaid fraud so that if you go along with this hospital, if you go along with this hospital administrator, we're going to make sure you get more money than you would have for a similar infection, right? Treating a similar infection. We're going to get you that $39,000 on a ventilator. We're going to get you that extra time in the hospital. We're going to get you anything you need to go along with this lie. So now we're into almost like a RICO kind of situation, right? Now, what's very interesting is recently Deborah Birx has published a book. And in her book, she openly says that they lied to then President Trump about this, the efficacy, the potential efficacy of the warp speed intervention. And therefore, in lying, she admits to committing a felony, a federal felony right now in her book, which is shocking to me that a lawyer would allow her to do that.
But remind our viewers who Deborah Birx is.
Deborah Birx was the handpicked appointee as and front woman for the COVID interaction between the White House and the people of this country. And she was handpicked and worked hand in hand with Fauci. So we're starting to see this incredible collusion, and they're bragging on themselves that they knew that they were lying to a sitting president and that their lies influenced it. That's criminal fraud. But what it does is it brings up another important concept legally, Dr. Paul, and that is willful misconduct. That a person willfully did what was wrong, and in doing so, defrauded the American people. Now, why willful misconduct is so important is because willful misconduct is the only legal principle that breaches the protections for the pharmaceutical industry. It breaches the protections on these shots. So now, once willful misconduct is proven in a court of law, any American who's been injured by these shots or lied to by these shots has a legal basis to go after in civil court the pharmaceutical industry and recoup money if their kids were hurt by the shot. I work with parents every day where their kids are. I just got a message this morning of somebody who's like, I have lost 40 pounds and I am scared because my body is wasting away after I've gotten the Pfizer shot. You know, I get these calls, I get these texts, I get these emails every day. And it's like, these people haven't been paid a penny for their injury. No one is really helping them outside of a few docs like me, or like, I'll take on the challenge. I don't know if I'm going to be able to help, but I'll try. Right. You know, they're just getting no help. And what comes of this is you look at who's making all this money: Pfizer, Moderna, NIH, Fauci, right? They're making all this money hand over fist. And who's suffering? The American people. The American people who've paid for all of this, and we don't own any of it, which is just unconscionable to me.
Yeah, and the world, in fact. I mean, this is a worldwide operation.
It is. It's a global operation. Just go on to beyondthecon.com and you go to the grand jury page, and you can actually download for free the grand jury petition. It's still in process. We are anticipating they're finally going to file a motion to dismiss. Of course they will, in August. And we are already preparing our response to their anticipated motion to dismiss. We're imploring the court to send all of our information to a grand jury and let the grand jury do what they're supposed to do, investigate it. If they find that there's nothing has been done wrong, okay, so be it. I don't know how that's possible, but so be it. But we deserve an investigation, and that's what we're pursuing.
I seem to recall reading that the individual you initially submitted to, who sent it to the DOJ rather than to the proper authorities, ended up being reassigned to Africa. is that true?
Scott Asfog, yes, was originally, we originally appealed to him. Let me give proper title. The Honorable Scott Asfog, he's an appointed U.S. attorney. We originally, through the senators, Senator Dennis Linthicum and Senator Kim Thatcher, we appealed to him to launch a grand jury investigation. He sent it to the Department of Justice. This is in August of 21. I think they thought we were going to go away. When we filed the grand jury petition in federal court in March 6th or 7th of this year, it gets assigned to Judge Marco Hernandez, the Honorable Marco Hernandez. And then it's just kind of sitting there. Well, the people that we told Scott Asfog he needed to investigate, he has now been assigned to defend, which is very interesting, right? So he's defending them. Wow. I think they figured out that wasn't going to work because of the previous interaction. So on July 14th, he gets reassigned. He gets reassigned as and sent to Nairobi, Kenya, on July 17th. They want him out of here. Just 3 days later, say your goodbyes. You're in Nairobi, Kenya for the next 2 years, buddy. We want you nowhere near this case. That's how I interpret what happened. That was pretty coincidental.
That's too much of a coincidence.
Right.
Interesting. Well, we're going to follow this with great interest. This is a labor of love, I know, and it's for the American people in the world. So folks, pay attention to this, and thank you, Dr. Ely, for all this work. I know you've been tireless on this one. Let's pivot to speaking about what people can do. I mean, there's still COVID going around, right? This virus mutates and sometimes becomes more contagious, but less harmful. But nevertheless, people are afraid and they want to know what can they do themselves to boost their immunity, to, you know, add a layer of protection, perhaps, with their own natural immune system. And I might add, and you know this, you're dealing with this, what do people do who are now experiencing symptoms or harm after having gotten the shot?
Right. Well, a couple of things. We got to make sure we always go back to our basics, right? There's so much overwhelming evidence about the efficacy of vitamin D, getting your bloodstream above 50 nanograms per milliliter. So what I've started doing, Dr. Paul, is taking people back to that. It's like, look, we knew this in April of 2020, right? But it's only been confirmed hundreds of times since in the peer-reviewed literature. So I got away from talking about it. And then I was like, you know what? No, that's so important. We got to keep talking about that. So number one, get your vitamin D levels checked. Make sure you're above 50 nanograms per milliliter. If you're not, 5,000 IUs of vitamin D3. Some people like it with K2 as well. Whatever, it's fine. But just make sure you're above 50 nanograms, because we know that people above 50 nanograms per milliliter have a 99.9% recovery rate, regardless of age, regardless of comorbidity, regardless of any of the high risk factors. It's still 99.9%. We also know that...
I got to stop you right there. Sorry.
Yeah.
Folks, if you wanted a vaccine that would give you 99.9% protection, this vaccine would be spread around the entire world. Vitamin D is about as inexpensive a supplement as you can find. And if you don't even have access to supplements, you live in a part of the world where there's sunshine, get out in the sun. That's how your body... I mean, this is the most important thing a person can do. Can you speak to vitamin E, C, A, and zinc?
Absolutely. The CDC has known since I think it was the first studies were done in 2005. They were called the NHANES studies, and they do them regularly. They've known that Americans are vastly deficient in these key immunological nutrients. So vitamin C, we know, is not only going to support the immune system, but it's also going to kill infections. Vitamin E, we know, is going to be very important for cell replication. And when we're talking about the immune system, you're talking immune cells, you're talking about rapid replication. Same thing with vitamin A, and vitamin A and zinc kind of work hand in hand, in that vitamin A is going to activate certain enzymes within the cell that help the cell utilize zinc more efficiently to produce enzymes that are antiviral, right? And that's really where these nutrients come in. They help the cell do what it's supposed to do, which is stay very protected. And when something's not there, kill it. You know, if we just keep things really simple. So if you're deficient in these nutrients, that means now you are susceptible. You're susceptible to infection. You're susceptible to severe outcome from that type of infection. If we have a cell, and if the virus is on the outside of the cell, that's an exposure. It doesn't become an infection until the virus gets into the cell. And if the virus gets into the cell and the cell is nutrient deficient, that virus is going to take over that cell and start producing copies of itself like crazy. And then the cell is going to pop, and now that virus is going to spread everywhere, and you're going to be very symptomatic. But imagine this. Imagine you get exposed and, you know, somebody coughed or you something around you and you got freaked out and the virus gets in. If there's all kind of nutrients out here, and if this cell is ready to go, if that virus should find its way in, then you are going to be exposed, but never infected. And so that's why we say it's not just about exposure. Exposure doesn't really mean anything. It's also about susceptibility. And what makes a person susceptible to infection? Nutrient deficiencies and severe stress. And you put those two things together, and now you have a recipe for a person being infected no matter what's going on with them. So what we've been encouraging and will continue to do, and this doesn't just apply to SARS-CoV-2, it applies to everything, applies to everything in your life, is make sure that you are taking, there's never been a more important time or a better time to learn how to take care of yourself with nutrition, and specifically with therapeutic amounts of specific nutrients, whether we're getting them in foods, if we can, or the sunlight in the case of vitamin D, or whether we're getting them in supplemental form. It doesn't really matter. It matters that we're putting them in our body every day to give our cells everything they need to produce health in our body. Because I'm tired of us producing disease. We're great at producing disease. Let's start producing health and see what happens in our world and how much more love comes in and how much less of a tolerance we have for liars as well, because those things go hand in hand.
That's beautiful. You have the Energetic Health Institute, where people can go and study nutrition with your team.
Right.
And it's an incredible resource. There's information there that's free, but there's also the ability to tap into your course, which is just incredible. I wanted to just put one little caveat on vitamin A, and maybe you can add to this. Mm-hmm. In my experience, that's the only vitamin that you do have to be somewhat careful with, because it's fat soluble. If you overdose on vitamin A, you can have symptoms and even neurological problems. What's your experience with dosing of vitamin A? What do you recommend?
Well, we recommend the beta carotene form, Dr. Paul, not the retinol form. Beta carotene is inactive. It's a storage form, completely safe. Zinc, if with the presence of zinc, will activate beta carotene and turn it into the retinol form as needed. So it's completely safe form, usually gets stored in fat tissue. Like you said, it's fat soluble, liver predominantly. But when people are taking the retinol form, if they're taking high doses of retinol form, you start talking about, I'd say 15, 20, 30, 50,000 I use regularly. Now you're going to get accumulation of an activated form. And yes, I agree with you. That now starts entering into toxicology. We do have concerns about potential of teratogenic effects, meaning like if an expecting mom is taking it, we don't want them taking it. So what I do to keep it simple is say, look, let's just stay away from the retinol form. We don't need it. Let's go ahead and give you the beta carotene form. And one of the best places to get beta carotene are going to be through our fruits and our vegetables, organic plant-based nutrition, especially things like organic carrot juice. It's like a glass of organic carrot juice an 8-ounce glass has on average over 100,000 IUs of beta carotene. You got plenty right there. Your body will store it and you don't have to worry about it causing any problems from a physiologic or biochemical standpoint.
Thank you for that. That's awesome. Solves the problem. So folks, watch out for that retinol form of vitamin A. Mm-hmm. Before we move away from nutrients, can you speak to glutathione and what other nutrients might be important for immune imprinting or priming? Sorry.
Amen. Yeah. Well, we have several layers of protection. So think of your adrenal glands and your thyroid and maybe even the chromosomes within the cell. Think of them as a core kind of thing. Outside of that, protecting that core is we have our body makes enzymes. Our body is going to make things, antioxidants that are going to be protecting. Think of antioxidants as stopping damage before it gets started. It's kind of like if you have a glass house and there's a pinball flying around in it, like a free radical, it start breaking down the house, right? Antioxidants would be like a sponge. They would catch that pinball before it hits the glass or it starts causing damage. So our body makes these. Melatonin actually acts in this capacity. But one of the ones that our body makes is glutathione. Now, glutathione is notoriously low in people who are nutrient deficient. So if you're deficient in vitamin D, you're deficient in vitamin A, Thorne Research did a great study on this in the early 2000s, I remember reading, where it was like they tested everybody's antioxidant levels, vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, and then they tested this the antioxidants the body makes, and glutathione was one of them. They found in every single person that if you're low in your antioxidants that you get from your foods, then your antioxidants that your body makes are going to be low as well, right? It's just a total correlation. So glutathione is a antioxidant that catches those pinballs, those free radicals, and stops the damage before it starts. The rate limiting step is a amino acid called in the form of N-acetylcysteine. It's cysteine, but it's in an N-acetyl form. So that's where you might have seen NAC out there, NAC.
Yep.
When you're taking that 600 milligrams to 1200 milligrams a day, what it does is it boosts your glutathione level if you have your vitamin D levels up and if you have your vitamin A levels up and so forth, right? It boosts everything up. So what glutathione does that's incredibly protective is glutathione has a really great help with the nervous system. So what we've seen in like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's is confirmed that the glutathione levels have flatlined in those patients. So when we get those up, we are now helping protect the nervous system and protect the fat around the nervous system, the fat that brings up the brain. So what I've been playing with actually, Dr. Paul, in the last couple of weeks is saying, is I've had a thought that maybe I'm really, really missing the mark on omega-3 fatty acids too, though. Glutathione and omega-3 fatty acids really work well together. And I said, we know what we can do with glutathione, and I've seen it work for patients who have an active COVID infection going, right? But what I started thinking about was, I go, you know, we're seeing a lot of neurologic issues in people right now, you know, a shocking number of neurologic. And a lot of it is in people who've gotten the shots for whatever reasons, and I'm not here to judge anybody. But what I've been seeing that's been concerning is something that's very akin to a multiple sclerosis, like, you know, pathophysiology going on. It seems like to me the myelin around the nerve is being broken down, kind of like we saw. So what do we do for MS patients? We boost antioxidants like crazy in them, but we also give them tons of omega-3 fatty acids, not only for the anti-inflammatory effect, but also to help repair the damaged fat. Right? The damaged fat around the nerves. So what I've been playing with now is I'm actually dosing omega-3s in myself 8 to 10 times what the recommended dose is.
So I know I've read studies on omega-3 fatty acids for depression or cardiac protection, about 2,000 milligrams a day, sometimes 3 or 4. What kind of dosing are you looking at?
In terms of dosing, we're looking at roughly about 10,000 milligrams per day.
Are there any side effects from taking that much omega-3?
I don't know yet. There's potential with any kind of fat consumption. If there's a gallbladder issue, you could activate that or you could bring it more into the awareness. There is the potential of some potential bowel disorder, you know, maybe a little loose stool, something similar to like vitamin C. But in terms of like what I'm feeling, like, and I always do this, I'll have a theory and I put my body through it first. Right. I'm like, let's feel it. And then we'll go test it. And then we'll see with some patients who it seems like it's relevant. You know, you start that process, right? I got to tell you, man, I've been doing this for about a week and I feel amazing. It's like,
you look like you feel amazing.
I feel great. I've been so exhausted, you know, with all the incessant mental work we've been all been doing, right, with this.
Right.
This has been the first time in a while. I just had a vacation a couple of weeks ago. I didn't feel rested after it or anything. This has been the first time that I've actually started feeling like, oh, okay, I can think and think quickly and sharply again. I think we are all severely depleted. I mean, I knew we were already severely depleted in omega-3 fatty acids.
Yeah.
I do think we are underdosing that substantially with ourselves and our patients.
Gotcha. So folks, I would add the caveat, don't try this at home, because
yes.
Dr. Ely here is a research nut and he's experimenting on himself, but it's fascinating and interesting. And I'm going to want an update on this as time goes by. Finally, and not finally, but moving forward with other places people can find information if they're dealing with a COVID vaccine or a COVID shot injury. Mm-hmm. Where can people find protocols and guidance for this?
We have put some information on the immune priming page on Beyond the Con. So you can go to beyondthecon.com, go to the immune priming page, and you'll scroll way down, but you'll a lot of information on there, but you'll get the feel. It's all of that builds into how we're dealing with it. Long haul syndrome and injuries, I want to tell everybody, we are still figuring this out. Everybody around the world. I haven't found anybody that I can say definitively has figured everything out. Now, the long haul, a lot easier to treat, in my opinion. We've been treating it just the same way as a severe nutrient deficiency and approaching it as a person. We just have to really increase their L-arginine to build up their nitric oxide. We got to increase their glutathione. In addition to the vitamin D, vitamin C, vitamin A, vitamin E, zinc, you know, and then you have concerns about microbiome. Dr. Sabine Hazen does a great job with this. We have to make sure we're getting bifidobacterium in as well. But when you do that over a period of time, I've seen long haul resolve. Now, when we're talking about the injuries, that's a very different thing. If it's a mild injury, I've seen autophagocytosis, fasting, knock it out, and people stay well after a couple fasting periods, a couple 3-day fasting periods, no problem. For the folks that have moderate to severe, and I'm working with a lot of folks that have very severe, and it's usually neurologic at that point, that the shots have likely lipid nanoparticle melded with a nerve or something. In those situations, we are still figuring it out. I can confidently say we've figured out how to get people stable using IV vitamin C and high dose nutrients and a little bit of autophagocytosis, some intermittent fasting, things like that. We've figured that part out, but moving people to the next step and getting into recovery, I'm about to publish on that pretty soon. And I hope we're getting close, but I don't want to misrepresent the work that we're doing. And I know there's a lot of people working on this. I think Dr. Pierre and Dr. Paul from the FLCCC are doing a lot of work on this. Dr. Christina Parks is doing a lot of work on this. We're all collaborating and talking, which is nice, and sharing information. Dr. Ted Fogarty with hyperbaric oxygen therapy doing great work. But I think what we haven't figured out yet is sequencing. So I'm actually about to publish a paper on something on fasting and a phenomenon that occurs within the nucleus of the cell called base excision repair, because there is a peer-reviewed and confirmed pathway for healing to occur and to help undo the genetic modifications people are experiencing. But wow. It's not an easy process. So I want to provide hope, but also not misrepresent it. It's a lot of fasting that people have to do. And in between fasting periods, a lot of nutrients. It appears possible right now. If you ask me, it appears possible.
Wow. That is the best news I've heard in a long time. I think folks who have experienced severe injury from the shots can feel pretty hopeless. And because the injuries can be so devastating. So this is great news indeed. We're going to get you back on the show when you've got this thing a little further down the road and you're published. But thank you for sharing that hope. Folks, you can go to the energetichealthinstitute.org and get a lot of this information. You can go to beyondthecon.com, and so much of Dr. Ely's work is there. Before we wrap it up, or as we wrap it up, rather, I wanted to I love your spirit. I love that you approach everything with a loving spirit. The state of our world just seems so polarized. Everything's dualistic. It's good or bad. It's mm-hmm. We're right, you're wrong. And, you know, it feels like even everything we've just shared here, it's just jam-packed with facts. We're not reaching people's hearts sometimes. How do we move from that dualistic right wrong world into a both and world where we're inclusive. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Ely?
Well, we talked about this yesterday, and I definitely want to talk about Socratic method, but let me just tell a quick story about it. One of my students is also studying at a university, and she wants to write up her thesis statement on this entire thing, and especially on the supposed vaccines and what they really are doing. So she was concerned about how her professor might receive it, right? Because it's a thesis statement. And I said, you know, one of the things we all have to strive to be is objective. Okay. And this is where the Socratic method comes in, because the first tenet of the Socratic method is a simple question. Is it accurate? Is the information I'm being presented with or that I'm presenting, is it accurate? Can I prove it? And I think that's what we've gotten away from. And then we get into this weird world where subjective and objective become kind of the same thing for people. My opinion becomes a fact, right? And that's the world we got to get away from. So, you know, I was talking to her and I said, listen, the first thing that I think would be really helpful is for you to write what you believe in. Whether somebody receives it well or not, you can't be creative in that way if you're concerned about ramifications. So you have to have that courage, just write it. But I think one thing you can do is you can start by asking anyone reading it to admit their own biases. Just say, hey, before you read this, I'm going to ask you whether you are pro this solution or anti this solution or somewhere in the middle, to just admit what your biases are before you read. So that now in reading this, you can come in with an open mind to what I'm presenting and decide based upon the merits I present them on, whether it's accurate, because that's what the Socratic method is. Is it accurate? But there were two other components to the Socratic method that allow for subjectivity. See, the first question is all about objectivity, but the two others ask for or allow for subjectivity, because we are emotional creatures and we need to appreciate that. And what he followed with is it accurate? But the second question is it kind?
Ooh.
And I think that's a very important question to ask ourselves right now. Is what I'm doing, what I'm saying, what I'm approaching, how I'm seeing this, is it kind? Is it kind to tell a kid that needs a kidney transplant and they haven't gotten the shots that they're not going to get the kidney that they've been waiting for? That's not kind, right? And then the last question, is it necessary? Right? We've never had a problem, for example, and this is maybe going to be a polarizing one for people. We never had a problem understanding that a man is a man and a woman is a woman. Is it necessary to have this discussion? Right? Is it necessary to look at the world in a way and create problems? No. Is it okay for a person to identify in any direction they want to? Of course, that's an expression of your freedom. And I want that same freedom for myself. Of course it is. I 100% support you. But the first thing we have to go back to is the original question. Is it accurate? And if we can't agree on an objective things that are accurate, then we're always going to be arguing about things that don't make sense. And this takes me back to this final point. I think it was in 2003, it might have been in 2007, that the CDC removed the statistical definition for what constitutes a pandemic. When you remove that, you remove objectivity, because now anything could be a pandemic. It's a pandemic because I said so. We've seen that same thing happen with the shots. There's supposed to be minimal thresholds for safety and efficacy that have to be proven before anything can go through any type of approval process. Well, they remove those. They don't care about them. We also have to look at necessity. If children under the age 17 have a recovery rate from this bioweapon of 99.99%, according to CDC data, then there is no rationale for necessity of this to be approved for them. We don't need to talk about anything else. It's not needed. You cannot do better than 99.99% recovery rates in any kind of medical situation. So what's happened, Dr. Paul, in my opinion, is that we've gotten away from, is it accurate? Is it kind? Is it necessary? And in doing so, we've blurred these lines between subjective, how I feel, and objective, what we all agree on. My opinion is now a fact. And until we have the courage to hold a line in the sand and say, you know what? If you're going to tell me that you've read a study, if you're going to tell me that scientists say or doctors say something, it is my duty now to call you on that and say, prove it. Prove it, CDC. Prove it, epidemiologists. Prove it, state health department. Prove what you are saying. The burden of proof isn't on me to prove that these shots don't work. The burden of proof is on you to prove that they do and to prove that they're safe. And you have failed miserably in those. And it's our duty now to continue to hold people accountable to make sure that these shots are stopped and this program is shut down, because the cleanup is already generational in what we have to do, right? We are this, it's not overselling this, Dr. Paul, to say that the fate of humanity is at stake right now in this moment. It is a biologic certainty that the people who continue to get injected are putting themselves in peril, and there will be, and I don't know what the estimates are going to be, but it's going to be very high. We're in the tens to hundreds of millions, at least, of people who are going to fall. Their systems are going to fail because their bodies have been genetically modified by these shots. If we don't start taking everything we know and figuring out how to work with the body to undo the damage that has been caused. And that's what I'm fighting for every single day. Justice, making sure that people who are hurt can heal, and doing everything I can to make sure that this never happens again. We can't survive another one of these. The best thing I think we can do with each other right now, Dr. Paul, and you do such a beautiful job of this, why I love you so much, man. Just hug each other with your words. It's the easiest thing to do. It costs us nothing, right? And it gains us everything. Just hug people with your words.
Yep. And when you can, hug them with your arms.
Yeah, hug them with your arms too. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great close. Thank you so much, folks. The truth always does come out in the end. We are living in a moment of truth, a time of truth. And it's also a very perilous time because of everything that we're trying to break through. That's what Dr. Ely's life is about. That's what this show is about. Thank you so much for coming back to Against the Wind. I love you, brother.
I love you too, man. Thank you so much.
Welcome, Bernadette, to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science. This is our Be the News section. You are so great at bringing us important things in the news. Right now, just recently, the World Health Organization made this declaration of monkeypox being a public health emergency of international concern.
Yeah.
Made by none other than the WHO Director, General Tedros Ghebreyesus,
whatever his name is, without the support of his advisory team. It's so appalling. He broke the tie that did not exist. The vote was nine
against six against it being a public health emergency. He's a man without medical training. He's just appointed to do their bidding, I guess, to get their policies just pushed through no matter what. So that being said, tell us about monkeypox. What is monkeypox? How many cases have there been?
Well, I don't have all the full numbers right now, Dr. Paul, but this is just going to be a brief overview. There's so much more to come.
Absolutely.
Per the CDC, and there's the link to their website, it's a rare disease. It's part of the family of viruses that smallpox is in, but it's rarely fatal. It's very mild. Discovered in 1958 at a research facility with monkeys. 1970 was the first case in humans. Prior to 2022, and Dr. Merrill Nass covers this very well. I'm glad you told me a bit earlier that you're going to be interviewing her to get the details of this. But it didn't used to spread human to human. It was people eating infected animals or touching, you know, the skins or the fur or something from an infected animal. But now it is spreading human to human. And You know, so there it is. And then there's the numbers per the CDC. And it's really interesting to look at. As the vaccine rolls out, there go the numbers up. It's really interesting. And that's about, you know, I don't want to say things that is misinformation, but there's an awful lot to monitor and look at and a lot more to come. Yeah. So this is the FDA's insert to the Jynneos. It's a smallpox and monkeypox vaccine. Came out in 2019 under really unusual circumstances that later on your Dr. Mass will explain. For effectiveness, there are no human trials for effectiveness. Monkeypox is so rare, they could not test it to see if it actually worked. So when you hear the CDC say, you know, oh, if you take it within so many days of exposure, it will work, or within 14 days, everything they're telling you about how well it works is pure speculation. Yeah. It's important to note that on the insert, they did some small safety trials. They did have cardiac adverse events of special interest that were quite high in individuals who had never received a smallpox vaccine in their life. The cardiac events after getting this Jynneos shot was 1.3%.
Wow. And I remember from medical school days that the smallpox vaccine had a lot of problems with cardiac issues as well.
Yes. Yeah. And then for the people in the study, the few who had smallpox vaccination earlier in life, their cardiac incidence were 2.1.
Wow.
And it was highest in individuals with HIV and atopic dermatitis.
Right. It's so bizarre. They're making a vaccine before there's a disease.
Yeah.
Reminds me of something that was going on with COVID. Huh. Anyway.
Yes.
Now there is a medication to treat as well. Is there?
I got a little bit more here.
Yeah.
On that Jynneos vaccine, because it is licensed, they were required to have a vaccine information sheet. So here's the CDC's vaccine information sheet. It does not mention cardiac incidents anywhere. So you're not being informed of that. People are not being told. And look at number six. Point number six, it is under the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program. You cannot sue the manufacturer for this. It's liability.
Got their immunity written in.
Right. So that shocked me when I learned that this weekend. That's licensed. There is no emergency declared in the United States. It's not under the PREP Act, anything like that. And yet there it is, countermeasures, which means you cannot sue. People do not understand bullet point six unless they're in our community. So far, there have been 31 cases of adverse events reported to VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. Most of them were because they're getting really big nodules and itchy, painful lumps at the injection site.
So who's taking this vaccine, Bernadette? Do you know?
Most are individuals in the gay LGBTQ community who are getting it. Mostly it's men, but there's quite a few women who reported adverse reactions in there. I provide the link there, and this will be on your website if people want to go see what type of reactions being reported. There's a couple of people reported like some sort of sores or lesions, but one didn't know if it was from the vaccine or from actually haven't been exposed to monkeypox. We don't know what's going to happen.
So the question was, apparently there's a drug now that's promoted as a treatment for monkeypox, disease that didn't really exist in the United States until recently.
Right.
And what do we know about this drug?
We know that it was a drug developed for smallpox. It's licensed for smallpox. It is not licensed for monkeypox. And the CDC has no studies for it in monkeypox. And they are allowing its use in one of their special programs. It's sort of like a compassionate use.
Mm.
And it really has to be considered only under that situation. So individuals who are prescribed it are required to sign. It's a 5-page informed consent form, and to tell them that there are no studies. This is basically a clinical trial you are entering by getting this drug, and they have to sign. They acknowledge all this, and it tells them about countermeasures program. To me, it's still a lot of obfuscation. If you read it, you still don't fully understand what's happening here.
Yeah.
The concerns.
So this whole monkeypox thing sounds a little bit like fear mongering. What do you have in terms of facts versus fear? Where are we at now?
Oh, then we go to the wonderful Truth for Health Foundation. I highly recommend you go to this website, explore all their information on so many issues. And if you can do it, click on the support button and help them out. Dr. Peter McCullough is associated with this great organization, and they have put together a monkeypox virus fact sheet. Now you need to just put your email address in there, and it gives you instant access to this fabulous information. I just love them. And to give you a snippet, because I did it and I got the information, it's going to give you, there's multiple pages. I forget how many it is. And it explains the disease, the shots, the drug, and then it goes on and explains some practical common sense things. And they even explain that the same thing that you were doing for COVID will help you with. And these are doctors, you know, and experienced individuals giving the advice here. So please go read what they say at truthforhealth.org. We want facts over fear.
Absolutely.
Most definitely.
Absolutely. So there you have it, folks. You know, the antidote to fear is being informed. And the antidote, or rather the way to avoid infection, is to support your natural immune system. Bernadette, you just outlined a nice list that we have been supporting people for COVID, both prevention and management of COVID once you get it, are finding phenomenal benefits from that same sort of regimen of nutritional supplementation. So yes.
Power
is in your hands.
Power's in your hands, but I my last word is this. This is, to me, the most blatant abuse of a targeted group like the gay and LGBTQ community by the government and pharmaceutical industry to use them as guinea pigs. They're not giving informed consent. They do not understand the experimental nature of the shot or of the drugs being pushed at them. What's happening is they're going to be pushing it out more and more. There's phases of as more and more goes to all the states, and they're trying to gather data so that eventually they're going to push it out to the entire community. And this is just like Tuskegee and all those other experiments where they're not being given fully informed consent, that they're entering trials. They just don't understand what it is. So I encourage individuals, you know, it's very difficult situation because it's just like with HIV. There's a lot of stigma going around with the community that this disease is found in. But everybody, whether you support certain behaviors or not, everybody deserves to be told the truth by our government, by the pharmaceutical industry. And we show love and compassion and kindness by making sure that everybody, no matter who they are, is given full information. So we need to act. We need to spread this out to those who are being targeted now. That's it.
The targeting is happening, and it's going to be expanded to everyone, folks. You can kind of see this thing coming like a freight train. Become informed, and then you don't have to be fearful at all. I mean,
yes.
I'm not fearful of COVID and monkeypox. Heck, that's like a nothing. So, no fear. Become informed, and then just support your natural immune system. You will be just fine. Thank you, yes. Bernadette, for this very informative session.
You're welcome.
Dr. Paul, thanks for watching the show. Please visit doctorsandscience.com. There you can access our members-only section. This show is member-supported. We don't have to take sponsors. We don't have to have anybody controlling the content of our show. This is a huge perk most people aren't aware of. Your membership gives you access to my ebooks, transcripts of every show, PowerPoints from talks I'm giving around the country, and live bonus peeks at behind-the-scenes work we're doing, my off-the-cuff thoughts and reviews on current events. Your support makes all this possible. Thank you. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.